FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You're listening to the Financial Survival Network. The date is March 2nd, 2015. We just finished up a tumultuous February. That means it's time for Mickey Fulp's monthly major market review. Mickey, how are you?
I'm well. I'm supposed to be in Toronto, but massive snowstorms and freezing rain has precluded me from getting on a plane over the weekend. So I'm going to miss PDAC for the first time in probably 15 years.
Wow. And, you know, if you were delivering the mail, you wouldn't have an excuse. But since you're on your way to PDAC, I guess you could be forgiven. And I mean, how many people are not going to make that conference because of the weather this time?
I'm not sure, but if you're going through Dallas over the weekend, you basically did not make it. So
Anyway, so
I'm here in Albuquerque and it's getting ready to snow again, but nothing like in the Northeast tier. And so I'm not going to miss the cold of Toronto.
Well, hey, I'm here in sunny Southern Florida. It was 82 degrees today, so no complaints. And you know, had this big debate at my discussion group over the weekend about man-caused climate change and global warming, and I'm just not having any of it, but that's not the purpose of our discussion. These markets, I don't know if the weather's affecting them, what's happening, but the stock markets, they just keep going up and up and up.
It sounds like a broken record, but we hit highs again in most of the major U.S. markets, including the Dow, now well over 18,000. S&P 500 closed above 2,100. The Russell 2000, well over 1,200 for an all-time record. All these markets are up 5 to 7%. And the NASDAQ hit 5,000 today. It closed last week up 7%, but it went over 5,000 today for the first time since the dot-com bubble burst 15 years ago. Now, in inflation terms, in constant dollar terms, we would be looking at a 6,900 NASDAQ for equivalent constant dollar value. And the NASDAQ has certainly changed from those bubble years. We actually have legitimate companies populating the NASDAQ now. But that's significant. Meanwhile, the Toronto Exchange, for reasons I can't explain, with commodities still in the toilet, gained almost 4%, is back above 15,000 and maybe 400 points off its all-time high. And the Venture Exchange was up last week, and it finally inched over 700 on that index again, up 4% over the month. I would attribute that to a pre-PDAC flurry of news releases and a bit of an uptick in the market, because everybody likes to go to Toronto no matter how bad those markets are for PDAC and no matter how cold it might be, because the parties are unrivaled and it's all free booze.
Maybe a rising tide is beginning to lift even the leakiest ships, huh?
Well, that index is still in a world of hurt. It's very bifurcated between the haves and the have-nots, and the haves are still doing well, but that probably only constitutes about 10% of the total companies listed on that exchange. Meanwhile, The emerging market index was up 3% over the month, and I would attribute that really because Chinese PMI actually switched from negative to neutral. It came in at 50.1 for the month of February, which is neutral at best, 50 being the break-even point.
Yeah, well, you got to keep your eye on those diffusion indices, though. Hey, that's those are kind of sketchy. But then we get to our currencies, and again, a story dominated by the dollar.
Yeah, well, the dollar consolidated most of the month. It went above 94 in January, and finished up 5% at the end of January. Most of February, it kind of mucked around in the 94 range before it rallied the last the end of last week. And once again today, it's over 95. So, you know, it mucked around, consolidated a bit, and now it looks like it might be starting to rise again. All in all, only up 0.5% over the month. Meanwhile, the euro was down about 1%, down to 112. You know, the U.S. still looks stronger than Europe, and although they are starting into the what looks like a major QE quantitative easing program, which, as bad as we have spoken about it, it appears to have worked to get the U.S. economy back on track in one way, shape, or the other. The Treasury bill, 10-year Treasury, was up 20%, but it's still very low at 2.03% on that rate. But it basically negated last month's loss. There's been some talk now about when the U.S. will finally, Fed will finally initiate a rate hike. General consensus is at the end of summer, early in the fall now. The market is probably already baking that in.
I'll believe it when I see it. But
yeah, well, what's it going to be, 0.25% or something? You know,
yeah.
Whoop-de-doo, right? When you're essentially in a zero interest rate environment, so real interest rates will remain very negative for the foreseeable future. I think we can agree on that. And then finally, Bitcoin actually was up 12% over the month. It had its third positive month in past 13. It takes $253 to buy a Bitcoin at this point.
Hey, two things I want to raise. Bitcoin, prospects of disarray in Europe potentially could be strengthening Bitcoin trade. But two currencies that have really been taking it on the chin, partly because of China, partly because of resource prices, the loonie and the Aussie dollar. I mean, they've just been disaster zones, along with the euro. Not that they're in danger like the euro is of busting apart because they're sovereign currencies, but they've really been killed, Mickey.
Well, yeah, but Kerry, they got killed basically till the first of the year, and they've been flat since then. So I'm looking at the Canadian dollar right now, and actually I should say until I'm looking at the chart here. Let me pull up a 60-day chart. Yeah, it's been flat since third week of January at about 0.8 plus or minus. If I look at the Aussie dollar, I dare say it's probably been the same thing. And it has been flat over the last month, more or less. So those currencies really got hurt until in the last month or two, they've kind of steadied. But yeah, they're both trading at probably at least five year lows versus the U.S. dollar.
My friends to the north who are down here in Florida are crying the blues, to say the least. But hey, that cycles for you. So wait, speaking of cycles, go to our metals here, and not a good month for them, to say the least, huh?
No, well, gold made a rally basically when the Swiss decoupled from the euro. It briefly touched 1300. That would have been in mid to late January that happened, and since then gold has kind of mucked around. It had a fairly negative month, a high of 1283 and a low of 1201 last week. But for the last couple of weeks, it's mucked around in the 1200 to 1220 range. It actually lost 5% over the month. Silver lost 4%, one of the few times where silver was a little less volatile than gold. But that ratio still remains 73 to 1. Platinum again took it in on the chin, down 4% over the month. The interesting thing about platinum was it hit last week, it hit a low of 1161, which is probably at least a 5-year low. I'm looking at a chart right now. We haven't seen this low of platinum price since it looks like about the third quarter of 2009. So it makes the platinum to gold ratio below one again. The other thing is palladium was up 6% over the month. It seems to be countering all the other precious metals since July, when the U.S. dollar started to rise. And you can only attribute that to strength in the U.S. car market and the fact that there's still a lot of Chinese that want a car. So that market, although it's slowed, is still fairly robust. So the platinum-palladium ratio is below 1.5, and it's been ages since that has happened, probably 10 or 15 years since it's been that low. So for me, that tells me right now I want to own some platinum, and good time to accumulate platinum, I think, anytime it's below $1,200.
For sure. Hey, one thing we didn't mention is the Justice Department looking into potential rigging of the precious metals markets by the 10 large banks.
Oh, yes.
Shocked. I'm saddened. I'm saddened. And it had absolutely no ostensible impact on prices whatsoever. One big yawn by everyone, whether you think all markets are rigged or whether you think we're living in a utopia of free markets, one and the same, everybody just shrugged it off and went about their business.
Well, I would go back to the point that all markets are rigged, and it's our job to figure out how to make money in the paradigm that we're given. When I saw that Justice Department action, and I think that was the beginning of last week, if memory serves. And right. Gold did rally a bit. It was up. It started going up February 24th. It was around 1200, and so it added $20 or so, and has since, now it's just essentially flat. But I guess there was no great surprise in that to me. And what's the ramifications going to be about it, even if they decide that those big banks, those 10 big banks, and those actually were mainly foreign banks. The only one I remember it was U.S. Bank was J.P. Morgan. What's the result of that? They give them some hundreds of millions of dollars in fines or tens of millions or whatever they fine them, and the big banks just keep on keeping on, So
nothing.
I don't know. That's my thoughts about it.
I just laughed. I said, "Oh, gee, April Fool's Day came early this year. I don't see anything happening. It's business as usual." For some reason, they needed to make a statement. I don't know what the statement was intended to do. It seemed to really just accomplish little or nothing, and just goes on and on. What happened with copper?
Well, it had a very nice rally over the month, up 7.5%. It was as low as 248 at one point early in the month. But I think we've established now that the base for copper is $2.50. And that makes a lot of sense, because there will be marginal producers that will shut down at 250 copper. And so it's now at 269. The other thing we had going on at the end of the week was post-Chinese New Year, and the country essentially shuts down for a week or 10 days. So we've gotten past that now. So I expect a relatively bullish short term for copper.
Dr. Copper takes a holiday because China being the largest copper market in the world really makes all the difference. And onto energy, definitely a big month there, a little bit of a rebound.
Well, yeah, the market bottomed at the end of January at 44 and change, and I called that by the end of the second week of February or so. It became very obvious that was the bottom. Oil, WTI, up a healthy 11.4% over the month. Went above $50, pulled back a bit. It looks like it's ready to consolidate in that plus or minus $50 range. Meanwhile, the big news of the month was Brent crude up a whopping 24% over the month. Closed the month at $61 and change. So that's a better than $11 arbitrage with WTI. It may reflect the fact that we are awash in oil, like crude oil in the United States from the shale oil boom. We don't have a lot of places to send that oil right now. Hopefully soon we will have some more easing of the export ban on oil in the U.S. But that's a healthy arbitrage. Now that ratio is at Brent to WTI at 1.23. We haven't seen those sorts of numbers since likely for the last 2+ years. And then going on, Henry Hub, despite the horrible weather, the all-time record cold in the northeast tier of states, the all-time snow amounts in places like Boston. Despite all this weather, and to show you how awash we are in that gas, Henry Hub was only up 3% over the month, closed at $2.77 a million BTU. The immediate future of Henry Hub gas does not look very positive because we're now into March and the slow season is approaching as the weather presumably will improve in the Northeast U.S. and Canada. We would have the slow season approaching, which would be April and May, and that's always a seasonal low for gas.
Yeah, and contrast that, Mickey, with last year, where it's not really reflected in the monthly numbers, but last February, it closed at around I think our numbers say 461, which was down. But during the months of January and February, the power companies were literally paying any price they had to get any amount of nat gas they could. They were desperate. They were converting power plants. They were shutting them down. There were brownouts. Here, the weather is equally as bad in some parts of the country, even worse. And it goes up 8 cents. They must have really been on a shopping spree last summer.
One of the things that happened last year is, if you remember, this weather, this polar vortex or whatever the weathermen call it, that went on for 3 months. And that was one of the all-time worst records for the Northeast winters ever. This time it was a 1 month affair. And I think probably there is so much gas in storage that there wasn't a crunch. I remember last year in either late January or February, there was a Henry Hub spike and it actually went to $11 at one and fell back to $7 the next day or something. So I would attribute it this year to lots of gas in storage and inventory. Here's what I know. Now, I don't use a lot of nat gas, basically heat my house and my office with wood, but But my gas bill, I think I used double the gas in January, and my gas bill was half of what it was last year. So that just tells you about the prices of nat gas.
Yeah, and I guess correspondingly, the price of propane has come down as well, even though we don't really track it, but it's directly dependent upon price of nat gas. And so interesting the way markets work and the way that they self-correct when you have these conditions. And that's why government really is the worst. Well, editorializing, but that's why you don't want government trying to fix every little market blip. They can't do it. And when they try to do it, they do a bad job. On to your favorite energy source, Mickey.
Well, uranium, and it was up a healthy 4% over the month, now at $39. So it creeps up, continues to creep up from its low last summer of $28. That's probably close to a 40% rise. And we've got Japanese reactors supposedly going to be restarted, and we've got some tightness in midterm supplies. So the mid to long term for uranium looks good, although the price is going to have to get up about to $45 before you're going to see some of the U.S. production ramp up again. And that's about it, Kerry, for this month. Interesting month once again, a bit tumultuous, but we love that volatility.
Yeah, well, it's been volatile, that's for sure. The story is that the stock markets for sure. Hey, resurgence from Bitcoin, resurgence in the energy sector, and uranium keeps going up. Uranium looks like it's really in a long beginnings, at least, of a long-term uptrend, doesn't it?
Well, we would expect that because the supply-demand fundamentals are compelling. And you know, the other thing I think we should emphasize over this month is copper was up. It's now trading at almost $2.70. I think you're likely to see some short squeezes over the next month or two. So I'm fairly bullish on the copper price at this point.
And one other thing, we were talking pre-call about future petroleum prices, barrel prices, and you know, your guess is somewhere 65 to 75 down the road, probably going to hold there for a while. Any idea when you're thinking that's going to kick in?
Well, I'm probably smart enough to not put hard time frames on my price predictions. They'll come back.
I always said you were a smart guy.
they'll come back to bite you. But, you know, I think we're probably a year out yet before we see some stabilization of oil prices, where a significant number of the U.S. producers, in fact, the majority of U.S. shale oil producers would be very happy with $70 oil. So that's kind of the thinking and the target price at this point.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's going to depend on those hedges, how fast they get unwound, and that storage situation, which I've known about for years. They've been stocking it in old super tankers moored off the coast of New Jersey, New York, and it's buried in salt mines in Utah and God knows where else. I don't even know where, but every crack crevice they can find to put it, they're putting it. And do you know how much there is? I don't. Nobody knows, but there's a lot, because that's why the price is down that low. But they'll eventually work it off, and it could be faster. That driving season in the U.S. Now, does it still exist, the summer driving season? Do people go away on vacation and drive their cars anymore? How much extra petroleum gets burnt off in the summers these days? Can't get a straight answer on it. We need to do some research on that, Mickey.
Well, I'll find out. I'll tell you, is I get in the hot rod Lincoln a couple of times a year, and it's when the weather is good, and go on a road trip. So, you know, it's with with oil, with gasoline, oil down and gasoline, we can still buy gas for about, I think it was $2.29 a gallon here. And probably, and that was just on the highway. I didn't check at my favorite filling station, as we used to know that.
don't call it a service station because you don't get no service anymore.
Right. At Sam's Club, I'm right. sure it's significantly cheaper. But I did see, here's one place none of us want to live, and that's California. Average gas price in California. I just told you the price in Albuquerque. Average gas price in California over the weekend was $3.89 a gallon.
Yeah. So, well, they deserve it.
That's what happens when you have that bureaucratic
socialism.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The nanny state takes care of you, and you pay. And I'm certain it's lots of places over $4 a gallon now, even though oil price is still half of what it was.
I'm sure in my former socialistic nanny state of New York, it's probably way over what it should be. It was always 40 cents a gallon or 50 cents a gallon more expensive than next door in New Jersey, where they even served it to you and pumped it right into your car. You didn't
back
even
when
have
it was
service.
Back when it was a service station.
Yeah, they still have it in New Jersey, the only state where you're not allowed to have self-service gas stations.
Oh yeah, right. So. Well, I also know you can't buy out of a package store in New Jersey. You can't, or maybe that's Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
I guess. Yeah,
Pennsylvania.
You gotta buy a case of beer. You can't buy a six pack out of a package store. You can only buy a case. So if you don't want to buy a case, you've got to. You can get around that by buying a case of 7-ounce Rolling Rocks, the mini Rolling Rocks.
Craziness. But that's the quirks, the differences of the states. But in the meantime, I think you could see oil prices start heading up gradually. And who knows, you might see them hit 60 before anybody thought possible. But further increases probably going to take some time to work off that inventory and to get people into a mindset that prices are going to go higher. They stayed up so high for so long, and that's probably due to the powers that be. And now they're going to stay down longer than they should have. So on that note, Mickey, we will talk to you next month. We'll do some research on these natural gas inventories, see where they're at. They're probably going to be way higher, which is going to maybe drive down natural gas to $2 per million cubic feet again in that range, which is real bad for the industry. But we'll see what happens.
Yes, we will. My analyst friends in Canada are predicting a $2 gas sometime in the spring here. So it is what it is, Kerry.
Yeah. Hey, and that's that wraps it up. And we'll talk to you next month. And hey, website, mercenarygeologist.com. Other sites we should look for?
41,000 plus followers now on Twitter at Mercenary Geologist and mercenarygeologist.fm. The interviews go up there.
All right. And of course, as always, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Make sure you sign up for our mailing list. Got a newsletter coming out shortly. And till next month, Mickey, we'll talk to you then.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.